Time. Anytime, anywhere, say the word. Closing out that set from his new release, Nothing But Time, we had Boston's Monster Mike Welch with I've Got Nothing But Time. Before that, from their new release, Cheat the Devil, we had Virginia's Anthony Rossano and the Conqueroos with Keeps Adding Up. And I got that set started off with Chicago's Denise LaGrassa and Right Step from her soon-to-be-released The Flame. This is the Rockin' Blues Show, and I'm your host, Brent Morrison. Starting off this set, the second part of my three-part interview with Canada's Chicago-based bluesman, Nigel Mack.
You grew up in Saskatchewan. What music was playing around the house when you were growing up there?
Jazz, the Beatles. We were just talking about earlier on today, Trini Lopez. A lot of jazz. My dad was a jazz fanatic. And then a lot of classical. And then folk as well, because it was the 60s. So we grew up with Peter, Paul, and Mary. When we were little kids growing up, Humphrey and the Dump Trucks were our next-door neighbors just across the back alley. So we hung out with those guys. And, you know, we're just little kids, you know. It's like, wow, man, this is so cool. And they had a bus, you know, the whole trip. And then a lot of blues, of course, because it was part of the scene, you know.
Mm-hmm. People like Susie Vinnick and Colin James and Widemouth Mason and White Boy Slim and Jack Semple, they're all from Saskatchewan. Some of them are still there. Do you know those guys?
Well, Jack Semple, yeah, he's fantastic. And Susie was just the young girl who was always showing up at the jams. She's a wonderful, wonderful gal, great vocalist.
Oh, yeah.
And same thing with the cast from Widemouth Mason. We'd be playing a week at Bud's on Broadway, and they'd be there cadging licks off my guitar player the entire week.
You are a triple threat. You sing, you play guitar, slide guitar, and harmonica, which, by the way, on your first album, you had four hands, so I hope you've recovered from the surgery.
Yeah, unfortunately, the four hands went along with the long hair.
Which is also gone.
Yeah, which is also gone, yeah.
Which did you start playing first?
I started playing the guitar first, you know. I grew up around the Beatles, you know. It's like the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, and, you know, everybody played guitar. And so that was what I wanted to play. I got my first guitar when I was about 8. I think we got it on Thursday night. My first guitar lesson was on Saturday morning. And I went and took it downstairs in the basement, and I just, you know, just I didn't know how to play anything. I just strummed on it, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. What'd you find the hardest, the vocals? I know a lot of people say, oh, the vocals are always the hard one for me.
Well, I was really fortunate to get vocal lessons early on. When I was in university, I took some vocal lessons, and it really helped me out. Because I went on the road and sang when I was like 18, 19 years old. I was out on the road for like a year, and I was singing all wrong. So that was a little tough. But, you know, once I took the vocal lessons, I learned how to sing properly, and I had to relearn how to sing. Things were a lot better. But, yeah, vocals are tough because you can always tune up your guitar. But, you know, if you have a sore throat, if you don't get enough sleep, you know, first thing it shows in your voice.
When did you start playing the harmonica?
About 2 years after I started playing guitar, I was listening to a lot of Bob Dylan and Neil Young, and they had the harp and the rack. You know, I guess I was about 15, 16 years old at the time. And so I got a harp rack, you know. And then my friend in Saskatoon, Jim Schwab, rest his soul, he was the first cat that I knew that was a harp player. And so Jim, we were always jamming, and he was always blowing harp. He's got me into like, really listening to the like, cast like Sonny, Terry Brown, and McGee. Listened to a lot of James Cotton, you know, Sonny Boy Williamson 1 and 2, you mm-hmm, know. Yeah, mm-hmm. So then that led to the whole thing that I do.
In 2018, you were an honoree of Chicago's Little Walters Foundation. That must be a pretty good feeling considering the guy's considered the greatest harmonica player of all time.
It was a real honor to be invited by Billy Branch and the Sons of the Blues to because they were the host band. Yeah, it was really cool. And they said, what song do you want to pick? So I got to pick She's So Fine. And it was a great thrill. My long-term drummer, Andrew Blaze Thomas, was playing with Billy Branch at the time. Yeah, so it was just a wonderful thing. We got to hang out with his daughter. She's part of the whole scene. Yeah, it was just a trip. What a great honor. It was truly honorable.
Getting back to some of the songs, there's some songs that just really catch my attention. Graveyard Gate, what was behind that one?
Graveyard Gate is one of those situations where you've got two lovers and you keep on missing each other, and you know the modern world pulls you apart. So there's a metaphorical thing, you know, where you're just always missing that one person. You never seem to be able to get with that person long enough, you know. And so then it became the Graveyard Gate. You know, that was the metaphorical term for that thing where your relationship just hits the graveyard gate. And then at the very end of the song, there's an actual graveyard gate closing. The sound, I recorded it on my cell phone in the small town of Baudouin, France, in the south of France. And that's where Lise's grandparents are buried. And it's a big wrought iron gate with rusty hinges that they've never oiled. You know, it's like I captured that sound, and I saved that sound for like, what, 10 years. I made sure that I didn't lose it, put it in my computer, backed it up with the hard drive, because it was like the sound I was looking for.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, SFU Burnaby.
Musicians played on this album, because I've seen like upwards of 8 or 12, but I'm not even sure. Are you sure?
No, I'm not sure. I was just say it was a cast of thousands. 10 years in the making and a cast of thousands. A lot of cats played on there on the record, because literally it was recorded in spits and spurts. It's hard to get that full budget together, so you just have a little bit of time, put something together and make something happen. You have enough to lay down one or two tracks, so then you've got to go on the road and that sort of stuff. And then literally the guy was playing the piano on Back in Style, he passed away.
That was Marty Sammons?
That was Derwin Davis. Derwin Davis passed away. And then the bass player in the album, Andre Howard, he also passed away, sadly. And then the last person to pass away was Marty Sammons, who was Buddy Guy's keyboard player for many, many years. And a real, they're all dear friends, you know, so it really sucked.
Wow. That does suck.
Go find somebody else to play on the record. What do you know, to finish this thing off, we need somebody, you know.
Did you get some help from Canada? It's like from the Vancouver boys?
No, this is all Chicago, this one. This is my first album that's recorded all in Chicago. But we'll be back.
Blues Enough for You, solo acoustic. I think you do one on every album. Is that your 1929 National Steel?
That is Rusty, my 29 National Steel. And right dead in the center of the mix, if you listen through in your headphones or a good set of speakers, you can hear my 1964 Martin in the center. That's the one that's playing the chords. And then one National is playing more chordal. And then the other National is, of course, doing the slide solos. And then there's harp on it, too. So, yeah.
Yeah, great song. I mean,
Thanks, man.
I really like this album. And the instrumental on it.
Redemption.
It's like 2.5 minutes, and it's just grabs you.
Thanks, man. It was longer, and then it was like one of those situations. I wanted to have something that kind of came in and then put you in a different space and then left right away, so it didn't drag it out, you know what I mean? I wanted to make sure it was a concise package.
Like I said, it says it's your fourth album, and then I found on your website you've got a couple of other ones listed. For discographies, I always start at discogs.com, and there's a cassette demo tape of yours. Do you know what that is?
Yeah, I don't know where the cassette demo tape is. We recorded that at Peter Honeychurch's Fluid Sound right here in Vancouver, gosh, about 1989-90. Five songs, and that's the thing that was played to the professor, Eddie Lusk, rest his soul, who invited me to Chicago. So that really helped get my whole touring career going.
And you were playing in with the 92 Chicago Blues Fest?
I didn't actually play at the festival, but I was playing at a club called River West. We were on after Magic Slim, because he was the headliner. The way it worked was that the bar had a 4 o'clock liquor license, and so Magic Slim played until, say, 12:30, 1 o'clock, and then we went on after that. So then he was able to hear what I did, and really dug my slide playing, and some very, very nice things. So then was basically there for the whole weekend with my friend Terry. She was the one who played the professor my stuff, and because he used to tour around the circuit. He played the Yale a bunch of times, and you know, the tour with Otis Rush. He was quite the cat.
You moved from Saskatchewan to Vancouver in 98. Little bit of a different city out here, I guess, with the ocean and the mountains and stuff.
Yeah, well, my family's got very big roots in Vancouver. My granddad, Norman McKenzie, was the president of UBC from 1946 to 62. So my dad basically grew up here and went to UBC, was a member of the UBC ski team. I had two aunts living out here and an uncle and cousins, and so moving here was just a natural thing to do, because I've been coming here my whole life. And I love the city. You know, it's one of my favorite places.
And just to make us all feel a little older,
you released your debut, High Price to Play, in 1996.
27 years ago.
Because it is indeed a high price to play, if you've ever done any recording.
Angel Forrest said to me one time, I was asking her about that. She says, it costs money to be in the studio. You make your money on the road.
I love being in the studio. You know, yes, it costs money, but at the same time, you know, it's so much fun just to make stuff happen and put it down and make it happen with a bunch of cats, you know, in what is pretty much a clinical and sterile environment. But yeah, it's challenging. Most of us are creatures of live venues. It's just one of those situations where the more you do it, the more natural it is. And I always say it's always best to record the band live, like you're going to play off the floor. Just do your song with all the solos, do everything like that, just like you're playing in a bar. And then if you make a little hiccup, you can edit that out and punch something in. Because we used to record a 2-inch tape back in the day. And actually, a lot of this album was recorded on 2-inch tape. That's analog. So if you make a mistake, you either go over it, but you can't say, well, we'll keep that one and move on to the next one. No, it's none of that. You got to be very disciplined. Because it's dang expensive. It's like 300-something bucks a roll, and that's 15 minutes.
Do you make me 21 years old. A love was so hot, how come you treat me so cold?
Closing out that set from his new release, Back in Style, we had Canada's Chicago-based bluesman Nigel Mack with Graveyard Gate. And I got that set started off with the second part of my three-part interview with Nigel Mack. I'll have the last part later in the show. This is the Rockin' Blues Show, and I'm your host, Brent Morrison. Starting off this set from her new release, Best of Me, this is Chicago's Joanna Connor with Shine On.
I tell you once,
Closing out that set from her brand new release, Groove Me Baby, we had St. Louis's Lady J. Houston with Your Call. And I got that set started off with Chicago's Joanna Connor and Shine On from her new release, Best of Me. This is the Rockin' Blues Show, and I'm your host, Brent Morrison. Taking us across the top of our first hour, legendary British and Canadian blues artist Long John Baldry passed away 18 years ago Friday, July 21st, 2005 in Vancouver at 64. His career began in Britain in the 1950s as a folk and blues artist, and then in the 1960s he joined Alexis Corner's Blues Incorporated as their singer. As a solo artist, Long John charted two singles on the Billboard Hot 100 and eventually made his way to Canada, where he took up residence and became a citizen. He was nominated for two Juno Awards, winning in 1997 for Best Blues or Gospel Album of the Year. At the inaugural 1997 Maple Blues Awards, he was nominated for three awards, winning the first ever Blues with a Feeling Lifetime Achievement Award. From 1991's It Still Ain't Easy, this is the legendary Long John Baldry with his cover of the Powder Blues Band's What Have I Been Drinkin'?
What about isn't so. Bottle doesn't show. Bartender says it's whiskey, but I know it isn't so.